Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, Thursday edition. Football is back already. Don't have to wait very long these days. Where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. And we're also brought to you by Grainger, America's trusted source for industrial and safety supplies. Visit Grainger.com. The long national nightmare of Cleveland could be over in about, live math on the air is always dangerous for me, 20 hours. Is that right? Maybe a little bit less than 20 hours. Anyway, the Cleveland Browns are playing, and they are playing against the New York Jets, and even wilder, they are favored to win. The last I checked, they are around a three-point favorite. The Browns, in the past three seasons of football, are, let me try to get this right, 1-32-1. Think about how hard that is to pull off in the NFL, which is predicated on the idea that any given Sunday, any team can win. In the last three football seasons, the Browns are 1-32-1, and they are a favorite tonight against the Jets in the opener of NFL Week 3 action. Now, I'm actually probably going to be on the Jets because I don't think you can bet on the Browns until the Browns actually win, and because we know that Sam Darnold has already played in one big game, Monday Night Football opener against the Detroit Lions, and found a way to win. Having said that, I am certainly rooting for the Browns to win because I am so tired of the Browns losing, and I'm also tired of Hugh Jackson saying things about how he's confident in his team and everything else, and I actually just feel bad for the guy. Think about how many years Hugh Jackson would have to coach now to end up with a winning record in the NFL. This dude might have to coach until he's 140 to be able to get back to even in the NFL. When you start off in a 31-game hole, it ain't easy to get all the way back. Most NFL coaches, look at Jeff Fisher. The guy goes 8-8, 9-7, 7-9 every year. And he's been coaching for 25 years. I can't even imagine what's going to be required of Hugh Jackson to ever get back to even. But first, he's got to actually win a game. 1-32-1. Will he get it done tonight? Will the Browns' long national nightmare end? Let me go ahead and bring in the crew. I'm not sure myself. I'm going to take the under in this game. Little preview for my pick today and lock it in, 4:30 Eastern on FS1. Danny G, will the Browns' long national nightmare end tonight, and will they finally win a football game?
I say yes, they're going to win because their defense is good enough to beat the Jets.
So you're all in on this. Eddie Garcia, will it happen?
I'm saying no. All I know is
Debbie Downer
being inept, and I just can't imagine them actually putting a game together.
Can you believe that they are favored in a game? I mean, this seems crazy to me that you would favor the Browns over anybody. Roberto, what's going to happen tonight? Is the Browns' nightmare going to end?
Browns win. Yeah, because their defense is good enough to be able to beat the Jets. I agree with Danny.
Let's go to Dub. Dub in Nashville, our phone guru. Dub, what's going to happen?
I like the Browns. This is the third game in 11 days for the Jets. They got to be
tired. Yeah, I've heard the three games in 11 days angle for the Jets. And they opened on Monday Night Football. They played a Sunday, and now they're playing a Thursday, which in theory is a lot of football in a very short period of time for a team that's not very good. I will be watching because it's Thursday Night Football, and I'm genuinely curious whether the Browns can get it done or not. But it is a pretty remarkable string because if you think about it, the Browns don't win tonight. All right. First of all, everybody's going to take notice. I feel like a lot of times when a team loses, nobody notices. When you get this signature Thursday night game, Sunday night football game, Monday night football game, everybody is watching you. And so if you lose, it's much more noticeable. If the Browns lose this one, I think they're in trouble for who they're going to beat next. Because listen to this. They play the Raiders. And I know we've made fun of Danny G and Roberto's Raiders team. But going on the road against the Raiders, I don't feel optimistic that John Gruden is going to lose that game. Then they play the Ravens. I don't feel like the Ravens are going to lose to them. The Chargers are my Super Bowl pick. I feel like the Chargers are going to beat the Browns. Then they go on the road against the Bucks, who are on fire right now. I don't feel good about that game either. Then they go on the road against the Steelers for their second game against the Steelers. Maybe they could make a run there if the Steelers continue to fall apart. Then they've got the Chiefs. Then they've got the Falcons. Then they've got the Bengals, the Texans, the Panthers on the road against the Broncos, the Bengals again, and they close on the road against the Ravens. This is maybe the only game they're going to be favored in, guys, for the rest of the season. And I don't want to be an alarmist here, but if the Browns don't win this game, I think there's a decent chance they could go winless the rest of the way. And you know what's funny is Bud Light, did you see this story at a month ago or 2 months ago or whenever they did it? They are promising free beer all over the city of Cleveland when the Browns actually win a game. And it's actually a great marketing campaign. They brought in all these coolers full of beer and locked them. And the bar can't open it until the Browns actually win a football game. So it could be tonight. But if the Browns don't win tonight, then the clock is really going to start to tick going forward. And I think it turns into a when is it ever going to happen type situation. I also think if the Browns lose tonight and they were to fall to, it's always difficult to do their schedule now because of that tie game, they were to fall to 0-2-1. When do you have to make the decision to go with Baker Mayfield? If you are an awful football team and nothing is going well in your direction and you have a number one overall draft pick sitting on the sideline, don't you at some point just have to make the transition to try to make things a little bit more into entertaining for your home fans? I think so. But anyway, the Browns, massive game going on tonight. If they win, they would go to 1-1-1, which is a schedule you don't see very often. Maybe the perfect Browns schedule, perfect Browns record. And if they lose, they're going to go to 0-2-1 and effectively be out of the picture already again. I just ran you through all those other different games.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are getting it done on the show today. We got John Morosi. Going to bring him in now at John Morosi on Twitter. He is our baseball expert. John, are you comfortable in saying the Dodgers are going to win the division yet? It's been wild all year in the NL West. Are we at a safety point for the Dodgers, given what they just pulled off against the Rockies?
Good morning, Clay, and yes, we are. The Dodgers at this point will win the National League West. This series sweep over the Rockies in Los Angeles, to me, seals it, and not just of what happened, but how it happened. Dramatic walk-off in one of the wins. Last night, a dramatic home run by Yasiel Puig after a great effort by Walker Buehler. On the Rocky side of things, they are without Trevor Story, their key MVP candidate shortstop after an elbow injury, and we're not really entirely sure when he's going to come back. So Nolan Arenado has struggled at the plate for the Rockies here in the last several days. So when you add up Arenado's struggles and Story being out of the lineup, I just do not see a way that the Rockies make up 2.5 games in the last week and a half of the season. So that was a monumental series at Dodger Stadium. There's no other way to describe it. That's the last three nights, Clay, to me, are one of the reasons why I almost love big regular season series more so than I love maybe even the first round of the playoffs, because you have so many different storylines and dynamics, and there's such great familiarity between these two teams all season long. But this was a pivotal week of baseball, and the Dodgers in all three of those games we're just a little bit better.
All right, so one thing I like to do when you start to project how the playoffs could go is look at run differential, right? I mean, the record is great, but the record can be a little bit arbitrary. And for people who haven't paid a lot of attention to run differential, you know, you might win a game 10-2, and that can be great. You might also lose a game 20-2. It can throw things off. But generally speaking, the more runs you score as opposed to your opponents over the course of the season, the better you're going to be. The Dodgers, while they have been in this battle with the Colorado Rockies, are substantially the best team in the National League when it comes to run differential. How much attention do you pay to that stat, and would that bode well for the Dodgers getting into the playoffs?
Well, it's telling, Clay, that's how the standings have looked for a while. The Dodgers have had the best run differential in this league for a very long time, and up until recently, it was a great note that our Anthony Masterson of Fox Sports, who you know, one of the great researchers there, Anthony looked up the fact that if the Dodgers had missed the playoffs, they would have been the first team to have the best run differential in their league and miss the playoffs since the 05 Cleveland Indians back before there was a second wild card. So this would have been somewhat unprecedented for the Dodgers to be this good and be home in October. So I think the analytics community would tell you this is a great win for the analytical way of looking at things, because they would say that this was bound to happen eventually. This team was going to return to its mean and get back to what the numbers said was going to happen all along, which was that they were the best team, if not in the league, and certainly the division. So I think that's telling. And you look around though too. It's interesting that here we have the Dodgers with the best run differential in the National League, but they're likely to be the number two seed in the playoffs, because you've got the Cubs with the best record, and probably even if the Cubs don't win the National League Central, the Brewers, who have a better winning percentage than the Dodgers right now, likely would be the one team that could overtake the Cubs in that division. But again, that looks pretty unlikely too, because it's now a three-game lead for the Cubs. So I think right now it's looking like the playoff matchups there. The Cubs will get the wild card game winner, and it'll be the Dodgers and the Braves in a rematch of their 2013 National League Division Series.
All right, let's talk about the Dodgers-Braves. So if the Dodgers and the Braves play against each other, the Braves have had such a star-crossed postseason history. Now, the team is so young that obviously nobody really has hardly any recollection or connection to the star-crossed era of the Atlanta Braves. How would you break down that series?
I think right now, Clay, the Dodgers are playing probably the best baseball of any team in the National League. And I have my worries about the Braves' bullpen. The Braves just won yesterday after losing four straight. So I've got some concerns about a very untested, very fluid Braves bullpen. I'm not entirely sure what their rotation would be in that series either. We know that Foltynewicz probably gets the game one start, but he did not look good at all this week. And I'm wondering if maybe physically he's not completely 100% at this point in time. So there's a lot going on there with the Braves. I think that the Dodgers have the edge in that series as well. I think you look at the way they're playing right now. Their bullpen, Kenley Jansen, has been much better of late. It's been a really key thing this month after missing the time with the heart condition, that he has been close to himself. Maybe not all the way back, but close. And so that to me is advantage Dodgers there in the bullpen. The rotation, advantage Dodgers as well. And then in the lineup, I think we're seeing some really encouraging signs from Puig. So I think that the Dodgers, at least as it looks right now, are the better overall team. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. But it's interesting, Clay, that as you talk about the postseason failings, it was 5 years ago that the Braves and Dodgers met in the first round. And recall that the series basically ended with Craig Kimbrell warming up in the bullpen at Dodger Stadium, never getting into the pivotal game four, in which Juan Uribe hit that amazing home run at Dodger Stadium to put the Dodgers back in front. So there is some fairly recent playoff history, and yet, to your point, off the top of my head, I think probably it's just Freddie Freeman, who was a key part of that team in 13, who's now still on the Braves roster right now. So it's pretty remarkable how quickly things have changed with that roster in Atlanta.
when you look at the playoff picture, what jumps out to me as a casual baseball fan, and we're talking to John Morosi at John Morosi, J-O-N-M-O-R-O-S-I, you can follow him on Twitter, is how ecstatic Major League Baseball has to be with the teams in the mix. Dodgers, obviously, huge fan base in the nation's second largest market. Chicago Cubs, I mean, anytime the Cubs get into the postseason, even though they've now won a World Series, everybody is ecstatic. The Braves in the South, you know, kind of bringing that audience, a long time WTBS, made there be a lot of Braves fans nationwide. You've got Houston in the American League, which obviously is a huge market, and they're the defending champions, and they played that great seven-game series. So I imagine Major League Baseball would be very happy if they got a rematch of L.A. and Houston all over again. You've got the Indians, who have this star-crossed history now. They're the team that probably most people would point to and say, I'd love to see the Indians actually win. And then you've got the Yankees and the Red Sox, both kind of in the mix there. Certainly the Red Sox have locked up that division. This couldn't have gone any better from baseball from the perspective of big brands that people care about who will enjoy being watched, right? Like, this is about, like, perfect score almost for Major League Baseball in terms of the teams to be advancing to the playoffs.
I agree. And you look at the Red Sox and the Yankees, they could meet in the first round for the first time. Now, of course, they have met in the ALCS before. They had the memorable one-game playoff in 78, but this would be the first five-game ALDS between them if, in fact, the Yankees beat the A's in that wild card game, rather, to meet the Red Sox. So I think you could see a Red Sox-Indians or Red Sox-Astros or Yankees-Indians, Yankees-Astros. Those are all the possibilities there for the ALCS if the Yankees advance and beat the Athletics. And then in the NLCS, you could have a Dodgers-Cubs rematch for the third consecutive year, which, while it's not new and exciting, to your point, it brings in two of our three largest markets in our country. And we often, I think, forget to, in mentioning Houston, that's the fourth largest city in our country. So there's a lot to like there with the matchups. And I think overall, Clay, the game is in a great place. I know there's a lot of questions about pace of play and other sort of existential topics about baseball that you and I have gotten into in the past. But if you want to love the game, if you are a baseball fan, you've got all the stories that you need. The Dodgers trying to win their first championship in 30 years with their path to redemption, if you will. The Cardinals are a fun story with what they've done under Mike Schilt, their new manager who replaced Mike Othini in the middle of the season. The Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr. is an MVP candidate in his very first year at 20 years old. Shades of Andrew Jones from 20 years ago. So there's a lot to like about the way that these teams are constructed. There are exciting young players in virtually every team. Christian Yelich, amazing story, two cycles in a month, and he's leading the Brewers now to that wild card game. So there's a lot of really great storylines out there, Clay, that I think as the nation really tunes in a big way to baseball in October, I think they're going to be very, very pleased with what they see.
Red Sox, by far the best team in Major League Baseball from a score perspective, from a run differential perspective, other than the Houston. But basically, the Red Sox probably should be the favorite. And I ask you this every week, but I think it's an interesting question. Red Sox or the field? How much of a favorite should the Red Sox be?
I'm going with the field right now, Clay. I'm not entirely convinced that the Red Sox are a clear favorite to win the American League because Chris Sale, their ace, is just working his way back from an injury and probably will only be stretched out to around five innings by the time the playoffs begin. David Price lost last night to the Yankees again. And so for as great as they are, and Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez are major MVP candidates, I think the bullpen with Kimbrel has been good, certainly good enough, and should be reliable down in the playoffs, although I've got some concerns about how they're going to set up with Stephen Wright maybe throwing a knuckleball in the seventh or eighth inning, which is always a challenge. So they've got some concerns. I think health-wise, Eduardo Nunez banged up his knee again. So this team, while they keep winning, I know it sounds silly to say it, Clay, but they keep winning, but I still see the flaws. And so I would take the field in the American League. I think a team like Cleveland, they just brought in Donaldson. They have not had to play a very pressure-packed game in a long time because of how comfortable they've been winning the American League Central. I think that team has got an excellent chance. If they get Trevor Bauer is supposed to come back this weekend. If Bauer comes in and is even close to himself, that is a dangerous Cleveland Indians team, I believe. With all the history weighing on them, this is probably about as carefree as they could possibly be entering the playoffs.
All right, so who is your World Series pick right now? Obviously, by next week, we'll basically have the playoffs set. But if you were picking right now, your AL and NL representatives would be who?
I think I will go with that which you foreshadowed a moment ago, Clay. I'll go the rematch, Astros-Dodgers. So I guess in both these cases, then, I would not be picking the top seed to win in either league. Because, notably, the top seeds we have seen basically almost every year that we've had this two wild card format, one of those top seeds will be bounced in the first round by the wild card game winner. So I've got a pair of the likely number two seeds there, Houston and L.A. meeting again in the playoffs, in the World Series, rather. The Astros' bullpen, Clay, is just so deep. They've got, no matter how they arrange their pen, they'll have three guys, I believe, who are bona fide, excellent relievers off their roster. That's how deep they are. So I think the Astros meet the Dodgers in the World Series again, and let's say they probably win it once more. Their pitching is too good there in Houston, I think, and they'll find a way to win a second straight World Series.
What would happen if the Cubs and the Red Sox met in the World Series?
It'd be great. I would love
would the
it.
World end?
It wouldn't quite be the same, Clay, that it would have been in 03. Eric Karros, our colleague at Fox, always talks about that and how it was meant to be Cubs-Red Sox that year, and instead we got Yankees-Marlins. If it had been in 03 before either of them had won and ended their curse, it would have been probably the single most epic sporting event in our lifetimes in this country. But I still think it'd be a great matchup. The history of those ballparks, my goodness, that would be great for baseball and great for the sports world.
Good stuff as always. Appreciate you, John Morosi. Go follow him on Twitter. He joins us every Thursday in Hour 2 to break down baseball at John Morosi, JonMorosi. You can follow him there.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
My gift to you, the anonymous mailbag, which is the most popular thing consistently that we do on my website, outkickthecoverage.com, now brought to you on radio. I'm going to solve whatever problems you may have in your life live on the radio, trying to make the world a better place. Let's go to, we've got Tennessee, Indiana, and Virginia. I don't need your name. I just need your problem. Let's go to Tennessee first. What you got for me?
Hey, Clay. I have been trying to get back into the dating scene the last couple of years. My wife passed away from cancer. It was a rough time, but I need your help. I've been trying to date. I've used all the apps. I've tried to meet people in person. But I need your over-under on, like, if a woman's been divorced, how long that she's been single, like, the red flags just are really, really bad with some of these women. I'm talking Cocoa Puff, and then you try to date the women that have never been married. Like, I just need your help, man. I need to
all
know,
right,
like,
so first let me ask a couple
I
of questions.
Completely avoid. Go.
All right, how old are you?
I'm 50.
Do you have kids?
Two grown daughters.
What age range are you trying to date?
Anything.
Anything. All right. So 50-year-old guy, two grown daughters. You have a job, like you're reliable, like all those things. Okay. And you have tried dating at, like, what has been your most successful route to end up with a dating partner so far?
eHarmony has been fairly successful. Match was okay. Tried some Bumble and Tinder, and it's been like back and forth. It's weird because those formats are a little different.
All right, so for a 50-year-old guy on Bumble and Tinder, what's that experience like? Who are you meeting on Bumble and Tinder? For people out there who don't know, these are like the youngest of the dating apps. Like, you can swipe and make easy decisions there. What kind of girls are you meeting there?
It has been a wide range of some women that look really good to some that just all due respect, they are not. And on the anything, I mean, I'm talking like early 40s to mid 40s, late 40s, even to my age, even low 50s. If everything
what are you
is there,
okay, but, what are you looking for here? Are you looking for somebody to get married to, or are you looking for somebody to date, or are you just looking for somebody to sleep with?
Loaded question, but I mean, really, truly, I mean, long-term committed relationship with somebody that's not nuts and dealing with a lot of baggage that could potentially lead to marriage, not trying to replace my wife and get someone to be my girl's mom. I just, they're doing their own thing. They're grown. They're in great shape. It's really for me trying to find that person that I actually want to be with.
Okay, last question for you, and then we'll discuss. Do you want somebody who has young kids themselves?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't want to raise somebody else's kids because I even – and that's a great question because I tried to date a couple of people like that had younger kids, and it was like, well, I've got the child this weekend. I don't have the child next weekend. He's got them. But then when you start dealing with the ex and the joint custody and all that, all you end up hearing about and talking about is the ex and the situation with the ex. And I'm like – I don't want to Dr. Phil you through your life and raising somebody else's kid. It's like, I'm not there.
All right, great call. I appreciate it. All right, I'm going to discuss here for a minute. So first of all, he's 50, and he's got two grown daughters of his own, so he's already been through the kid Olympics, right? You've already raised kids. I totally understand that. I think he's in an interesting spot because at 50, I think he could dip all the way down to like 35 if he's got a successful job, and people wouldn't even blink at him dating like a 35, 36, 37, 38-year-old. But those women are probably likely to have young kids, right? And so the challenge then becomes, what do you want to do? Either they don't have kids at all, which means that, you know, they haven't gotten committed yet, or they're likely to have young kids, right? Like, what's the number one age of a woman right now in America where she's likely to have a young kid? 35 to 38-year-old women, almost all of them do, right? And so if you don't want the young kids, I don't really know what the angle that you play there is. I feel like you have to date people your exact own age, and I don't think you're going to meet those people on Bumble or Tinder. I don't think you're going to meet a 48-year-old woman who's completely normal and have her be on Bumble and Tinder. So I actually think you need to go old school and get outside of like the dating app scene, because I don't think that your average woman in that arena is going to be in that perspective. Is that good? I don't think you're going to meet the woman of your dreams at 50 on Bumble or Tinder and have her not have kids, right?
Yeah.
I also don't think it's likely that you're going to meet. I think you almost need to limit yourself to women who are like around almost exactly your own age if your goal is to not have to raise somebody else's kids. Because otherwise, if you go a decade younger, almost every 40-year-old woman out there is going to be divorced and or have young kids. Does that make sense? Like 50 to me is like a tenuous age in that respect.
Yeah, he's 10 years older than me, and I'm having a tough time bumping into women that don't have children yet. And like you said, they're going to have to be 30 years and younger, really, to not have any baby daddy drama at all.
And yeah, if he were 40,
yeah,
he could make a decision and be like, hey, I'm going to go back in and basically redo everything, right? But then if you're going back and dating like a 30-year-old, then you go through having kids again. And I can totally understand, as a 50-year-old guy, you're like, no, I already raised two daughters. The last thing I want to do is go back through being a parent for the next, you know, look, if you're 50 and you've got young kids, you know, you're going to be 70 and still dealing with trying to take a kid off to college. Like, that's something I think a lot of people don't want to do. So my advice was, I think you need to meet people in person. I didn't ask him about church or religion or anything like that, but I would actually try to meet somebody at church. If you have like some sort of social, if you're not church, like some sort of social interaction that's actually face-to-face. Because I think in terms of being a reliable guy, a 50-year-old widower who has already raised two daughters, like, you're a pretty good catch at that point in time. You got a good job. You're relatively healthy. I think you should be pretty optimistic about yourself. Let's go to Virginia, I believe, right now. 877-996-6369. If you're just waking up, we are doing the anonymous mailbag live on the radio. I'm trying to solve everybody's problems. What you got for me, Virginia?
Hey, Clay, good morning. Another domestic issue here. Been married for 12 years, and this question will not solve itself. How many times is a guy's shower towel good for? My wife says one.
Shower towel, how many times is a shower towel good for?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I mean, I would use a shower towel for like a whole week. Like, I mean, if you got the shower towel rack, first of all, you're using the shower towel when you come out of the shower, which means in theory you should be clean. And if you've got the shower towel rack right there and you can hang the shower towel on it, I don't even think about how long I use it. I don't even ever switch them out. My wife switches them out, but I know we use them more than once. There's no way you can only use it one time. Like, I do know, like, when I'm in a hotel, and I used to travel all the time, I'd be in hotels for, you know, a couple months a year at least, I would be fine using the same towel more than once. You know, they come in with all those different towels. I am perfectly fine. Like, you take the towel, you dry off, and, like, you lay it on, you know, some flat surface there. I'm perfectly fine grabbing it again. One-time use for a shower towel is absolutely ridiculous, which is crazy. All right, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, on the VIP line. Roberto, cue him up.
Hey, Clay. Just wanted some advice. You have three sons. I'm a new dad. I have a 20-month-old son, and seems like me and my wife disagree on how to raise him, really correct him and things. So I was wanting to ask you, what is the age where these kids know right from wrong and discipline needs to come in?
So he's 20 months old?
Yeah. He's smart, okay. And he's always, you know, he's a great kid, but he pushes the limit sometimes. And I think me and my wife are on two different pages.
Are
I don't want him to be a pussy willow one day.
Yeah. Are you more strict or is she more strict?
I'm more strict.
All right. So, first of all, parenting is almost impossible to figure out what the line is, because every kid is different. And I understand people out there who write the parenting books and they're like, every kid. It's not true. I've got three kids. What works with one kid might not work with the other kid. It's like coaching a team, right? If you really break down how you're raising kids, you got to figure out what makes each kid tick. My oldest kid regularly drives the entire family crazy, and I still have no idea how to get to him, right? He's the kind of kid who, like, he just doesn't listen, and he makes the same mistakes over and over again. Now, I am not I have never spanked a kid. I rarely, this is maybe surprise people, I don't raise my voice. Like, I am very calm. Like, I don't really get that worked up typically with parenting. And I will try to talk through every major dispute, right? But what will drive me crazy, and I'm sure drives a lot of other parents crazy, is not a kid making a mistake, because kids make mistakes all the time. It's kids making the same mistake over and over and over again. Now, here's the deal. With your 20-month-old, that's way too young for him to be willfully misbehaving, right? Like, I don't think you can solve every issue, and I don't think as being the dad, you really solve things by raising your voice or yelling at a kid that young, because I think he's too young to otherwise be able to solve the problem. So it's hard to judge, you know, parenting style and strategy without having witnessed it yourself. But with a 20-month-old, my inclination is to not be angry and not use your voice. And certainly I'm not a spanker. Like, everybody has different parenting strategies, but I would be more on the easygoing side than the aggressive side. Now, the other thing is, I think it also factors in, is your kid more difficult with you or with other people? Most times, like, none of my kids, we ever get any report of them being remotely misbehaving at school. Most kids are infinitely better outside of the house than they are inside the house, because if you've got a loving home, the kid knows that you love them, and so they don't feel the need to behave well to make sure that you love them. That's one of the downsides of being entirely as loving of a parent as most of us are. The kid knows that they've already got the love wrapped up. Whereas when they go off to school or they go off to daycare or they go to other people's houses, they're like, this person might not like me. You know your parents already like you and love you, hopefully. And so you don't have any need to actually win them over. And then when you go outside the house, you're better. You're a total ass at home. Tennessee, we're doing the anonymous mailbag on live on the radio. I'm solving every problem. Tennessee, what you got for me?
Hey, Clay. So my wife and I have been married for 21 years, and I now own my own business, and I travel every week during the week for far out of town. And I want us to get to where we have things paid off and we start, you know, I make really, really good money so we can live a really good lifestyle, you know, pay our house off, our cars. But every time I bring up a budget, my wife gets mad. She doesn't work now. She has in the past, but she doesn't work now and doesn't have to. And she feels like I'm trying to control her when I'm like, you know, hey, here's how much you have for food and gas for you and the kids this week. And, you know, she feels like
how
I'm
much?
All right.
So here's the question. First question. How much is she going over what you would like to be spending?
$500 to $600 every 2 weeks.
All right. So
not
okay.
All the time, but.
So it's about roughly 10 to 12 grand a year. You think she is overspending what you would like for her to spend?
Yes.
All right. It's a good question. And these are difficult decisions to have. Like, couples fight, I think, most often about finance. If she's spending 10 to 12 grand more than you think she should be spending, just an idea here. What if you told her, here's what I would like for the house budget to be. If you can keep it within this budget, then you and I are going to go on an awesome vacation that's going to cost $3,000. We're going to go somewhere you would really like to go that we would otherwise not go if you can save an extra $1,000 a month, right? So thanks for the call, by the way. I think the way you win over spouses in financial disputes, and sometimes, look, you're in a luxury situation where you have the money to be able to pay it. There are a lot of people listening to us out there right now who spend every dollar that they make, and they don't have that luxury. But I think the way that you do it is you convince somebody that you're going to be able to do something that otherwise you would not. Because it's easy to just kind of throw money away, right? Like, and the more money you make, I mean, I don't think it's a joke, more money, more problems. The more money you make, the more money you throw away. Like, I came on this show, I think, and complained. My wife bought a grand piano the other day. And in addition to buying a grand piano, we had to hire somebody to move the grand piano into our house. No one in our house plays the piano. This thing weighs like 4,000 pounds. It's never going to leave this house and move to wherever we go. And now we've got a huge grand piano. There's no way my wife buys the grand piano if I have not gotten us rich, right? So I sometimes sit around, and to answer the guy from Tennessee's question, like, I'll look at our budget and see what we spent, and I just roll my eyes. I'm like, if we had been spending this money 10 years ago, I would have lost my mind over this stuff. But you naturally start to spend more money and not pay as much attention to it as your income increases. And this, by the way, is a big deal in general, because there's a lot of people out there who think, hey, if I made $10,000 more a year, my life would be perfect. And you know what actually would end up happening? You would spend that $10,000 probably and start thinking, you know, if I made $10,000 more, this is the way humans are. We tend to spend whatever we end up with by and large. So I think the way that you handle this is there's a carrot and a stick diplomacy, right? A stick is like, hey, I'm gonna punish you if you don't do this. The carrot is, hey, if you do this, I'm gonna give you a reward. I'm a reward guy. I think it works better if you reward somebody for making good decisions than if you punish them for making bad decisions. So what I would do, and it also makes it seem like you're in control of the house and your wife might be rebelling against the idea that you're in control of the finances, if you guys sit down and say, hey, we would love to take this trip at the end of the year. We want to take this family vacation. We want to take this family trip, whatever it is, just the two of you. We're going to go stay in a fancy hotel. This is going to be amazing. We're going to have an incredible time. We are going to budget $3,000 for this. But what I need you to do is save 10. Then you get $7,000 extra a year that you weren't getting, and she gets a target that allows her to have a $3,000 vacation that otherwise you guys were not going to be able to afford. Both of you get a little bit of something. All right, this has been the Anonymous Mailbag. I think it's gone pretty well. You can let me know what you think of my advice by finding me on Twitter, @ClayTravis. I'm going to try to do this weekly.